What is up, everybody? It's Rhea Sicali over here with your boutique digital marketing. It's a new episode. It's a new day. It's a new dawn. Today, we're talking about unemployment and the nation's economy. We're also going to be reviewing an article on how to spot a competent leader, as well as our amazing guest that will be joining us towards the end of the show. So make sure to stay tuned. It's going to be an exciting show for you today. Have you ever wondered if there is a relationship between politics and economy? Why is it that during election times, terms like unemployment, economic growth, price stability, GDP start showing up? What is it with the political parties and these terms? Well, there's actually a very strong relationship between economy and politics. To understand this further, we're going to take a look at the United States. The U.S. has three main macroeconomic goals. A macroeconomic goal is one that the country hopes to achieve on a macro level for its economy. In the case of the United States, these three goals are economic growth, full employment, and price stability. The objective here is to create policies that will succeed in achieving these goals. This is where politics comes into play. If the politicians are doing the right things, then the nation's economy should be healthy. But how do we measure the nation's economic health? One of the best ways to do that is by examining the productions of its goods and services of the country. The higher the production, the greater the economic growth. And that brings us to GDP. Now, GDP is another term that gets thrown around during election season. It stands for Gross Domestic Product. GDP is the total market value of all the goods and services that are within the country's border. Luckily, every quarter, the Bureau of Labor and Labor Statistics publishes GDP figures, which could be used to track the progress. So in the United States, it's easy to track that progress because of the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. So how is the U.S. doing? In the case of the United States, slow and steady wins the race. The U.S. has been constantly growing at a slow 3 to 4% annual increase, which means an increase in production. An increase in production really means a decrease in unemployment or an increase in employment. So currently, these numbers are up, but that isn't always the case. There are always upward and downward changes that are called business cycles. Why does that matter to you as a business owner or to someone who's looking to open a business? Well, monitoring these changes can help you avoid the pitfalls that come with the change of cycles. Things to account for would be that during economic growth, companies tend to have a harder time hiring good employees, and they have a hard time finding raw materials and resources. Whereas in times of recession, businesses operate at a very low capacity. So knowing these things and monitoring them will help you plan for these events or for these cycles if and when they happen. So that when they do not come as a surprise, but rather you are fully equipped to your best abilities to face these problems or face these obstacles that will indefinitely come. So the second goal, macroeconomic goal, is full employment. And let's be honest here. 100% employment is unrealistic. So the ideal goal for a healthy economy in the United States would be a 94 to 96 employment rate among those who are actually employable. That means that the ideal rate would hover between 4 to 6% of unemployment. However, if you remember the 2009 recession, that was not the case. In 2009, unemployment rates rose to about 10%. So, the question that begs to be answered, I suppose, would be, what is unemployment? This sounds like a pretty straightforward answer, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. Unemployment is not just the lack of a job. It's really the lack of a job by those who are actively looking for it. And there are several types of unemployment. These are fictional unemployment, which is unemployment that is not related to a business cycle. For example, this could be someone who left their current position and is looking for a different one. The time between the first and the second position is fictional unemployment. This could be a college grad looking for employment for the first time. That would be called fictional unemployment. Number two is structural unemployment. It's also unrelated to the cycle, but this time it's involuntary. This is due to a lack of workers that have needed job skills in a particular industry or region. For example, with all the students that are being pushed to get college degrees, many skilled-based jobs are suffering. And they're suffering from structural unemployment because people that have the skill sets that they need to perform these jobs are not found. So it's an involuntary unemployment. Number three would be cyclical unemployment, which really is as it sounds. It is caused by the business cycles, for example, the 10% from the 2009 recession, maybe the things that are happening in the economy with the coronavirus as well. One of the ways to get through this period is by the government creating programs that boost the economy. And last type of unemployment that we have is seasonal unemployment. And if you notice that around Christmas, many, many, many retail workers are hired. And they're hired as seasonal workers. These seasonal workers tend to become jobless after that season. So, pretty straightforward, that is seasonal unemployment. Our last goal was price stability. So, price stability, another term for it that we hear a lot during election season is inflation. Inflation is the rise of the average prices of all goods and services. This is bad because the higher the inflation, the lower the purchasing power. If inflation rises faster than income, then money will not hold the same value it did before. You could only buy a percentage of what you used to buy before. In our current times, we're going through what is known as demand pull inflation. That occurs when demand of goods and services is higher than the supply. Think about the supply accompanying the coronavirus. The price of a desired product like wipes and sanitizers is rising because of its high demand. Because these goods and services are highly desired. They are valued at more money than they were before. Therefore, the same amount of money that you had will no longer buy the same products. I hope that all made sense. And if it didn't, make sure to ask us questions, info@boutiquedigitalmarketing.com, or feel free to leave us a message at 909-333-5116, and we will be happy to answer your call. After the break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the article of the day. And we do have a very awesome guest coming up today to hang out with us. So stay tuned, because it's going to be a fun rest of the episode. Welcome back, everybody. Today we are reviewing an article by Dr. Thomas Chamorro Premzik, who is the Chief Talent Scientist at Manpower Group, a professor of business psychology at the University College London and at Columbia University. Our article today is found in the Harvard Business Review, and it is titled How to Spot an Incompetent Leader. So often we talk about toxic cultures, and maybe we worked at a place and we think, I don't want to be here anymore. These people are driving me insane. I just feel like I'm suffocating. And odds are all of us have gone through this. So if you are going through this right now, you are not alone. How do we end up with toxic cultures? Well, we have to look at leadership. And this is where Dr. Thomas comes into play. And with his research, he's saying that we have to look at the qualities of the leadership team. Is the leadership team competent, or are they incompetent? Competent leaders, he says, cause a high level of trust and engagement and productivity in their employees, whereas incompetent ones really cause anxiety, alienation, and cause the employees to practice unproductive or counterproductive work. And that has a huge influence on the employees. So leadership is a very, very, very important part of the company and its success. And so Dr. Thomas explains that incompetent leaders are the main reason for unemployees' engagement, for the low levels of employee engagement. And they are the main reasons why people look for self-employment versus employment within a country. So one of the major factors in this would be arrogance. Arrogance plays a big role in creating leaders that are incompetent. So he says that contrary to popular belief, most people are overconfident rather than underconfident. And that means that people think that they are really good. And that is confidence. It's how good you think you are. And while in reality, they're not actually as good as they are, which is competence. Competence is how good you actually are versus how good you think you are. So in a lot of these men or these women that are becoming leaders, that are incompetent leaders, think they are overconfident. So think they are a lot better than what they actually are. And that is not a good thing. So all of us have this tendency to become overconfident in something. But when it comes in politics or business, this incompetence is, or this arrogance, or this thought that I'm more confident than I should be, is a sign of potential signals of incompetence. And that is something we want to avoid. So some of the things that Dr. Thomas has mentioned is that in one of his studies, he created a science-based assessment that is used to evaluate leadership potentials and match people to jobs. So a lot of these leaders that are being hired in leadership positions, if they were to take this test, we can know would they be competent leader or an incompetent leader, and it kind of gives you like a measurement from a scale from 0 to 100 of how competent you will be or how competent you won't be if you were to take the test, which is on in the article if you want to read it or if you want to take it. Again, Harvard Business Review, and this is titled How to Spot an Incompetent Leader. And these questions are: do you have an exceptional talent for leadership? Would most people want to be like you? Do you rarely make mistakes at work? Are you blessed with a natural charisma? Are you able to achieve anything you want just by putting your mind to it? Do you have a special gift for playing office politics? Are you destined to be successful? Is it easier for you to fool people rather than for people to fool you? Are you just too talented to fake humility? So we see here with these questions is a lot of it is centered on ego. And when we talk about, answers to these questions, could actually this one question or these set of questions give me an accurate assessment? Well, look at it in a different light. When we have data, then that data could be compared. So the answers to these questions are compared with other people's answers as well, and that kind of gives rise to the competence level or incompetence level. And so these reports or these assessments tend to be reliable, and they tend to measure arrogance and overconfidence. Now, people with these tendencies, like people that are narcissistic and people that are uninterested in portraying themselves in humble ways, they typically will tell you that they are very proud of their ego. And that is a sign of a bad leader. And in this case, we're not just talking about men, because a lot of people think that when we are talking about incompetent leadership, we're talking about men. That is not always the case. Women may be hired more for leadership positions without kind of letting go that they're incompetent because women are underrepresented in different fields, and men are overrepresented, and men biologically they are more equipped kind of to be more arrogant, sociologically as well. But that doesn't mean that incompetent women aren't being hired. So the best thing to do is to hire people that are with these traits of humility and integrity. And Dr. Thomas Chamorro constantly mentions this idea of us not wanting, we say that we want these traits in leaders, but these traits don't match the stereotypical idea that we have of a person, of a leader. So traits like humility and integrity, we constantly say we want someone who's humble and has a lot of integrity. But the truth is that they don't fit our fake or our flawed stereotypical idea of a leader. And that is an issue. The idea here is that I think that we must change the way we look at leadership. We must change the way we look at a lot of things to be able to fix them. Because it is true, leadership style is very important. It's very important to know what kind of leadership style that person has, and is it a healthy one? One of my favorite ones is servant leadership, because it allows you to put yourself in the second place and allows you to put someone else in there in the first place. And when you do that, I think it boosts up people's morale, and they're able to work better because they see how hardworking and how dedicated you are and how empathetic you are to their needs. And I really think that one of my favorite ones would be servant leadership. And later on, we will talk about different styles of leadership and what it is that we need to learn, and when I do book reviews and so forth. But for now, really, the reason why you find so many toxic things at work, so many toxic people, so many toxic leadership, has to do with arrogance and confidence versus competence. And so what I would like to leave you with today in this segment is, look at yourself and see, okay, if I want to become a leader, or if you are a leader in a leadership position today, what is it that you can do to change that, to change for the better? And what is it that, are you overconfident and undercompetent? Or is your competence level higher than your confidence level? If so, if you are overcompetent and just confident, then that's great. But if you're overconfident, then something has to change. Just take a moment to just, like, a self-realization, a self-reflection, and you will see that you can do better. And you'll see, you know, sometimes we have blind spots, so it's okay to ask people. It's okay to say, okay, this is how I'm analyzing myself in the leadership position. What do you think I should improve in? I talk to someone that you trust, and not just someone that will give you the feedback that you want to hear. And take that feedback and become better leaders. If you are striving to become a leader, then work in humility and work ethically and work with integrity and push for what you want, because eventually things will come into being. You just have to work for it and see the opportunities and seize them, but with humility and with ethics. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we have a very special guest for you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to today's show. Today, I have a very special guest for you. My guest has an MBA in international management and entrepreneurship. She has several years in the business industry in healthcare and tech and software. And she has her own consulting company. My guest today is Julie Latouf. Julie's company focuses on helping businesses become better and develop and work with their employees so that they have they're always growing. So without further ado, let's talk to Julie. Julie, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm very excited to talk to you about this.
Thank you for being with us. We're so happy you are here. You are a wealth of knowledge, my dear Julie.
Thank you, Rita. You are too.
Thanks. So today, Julie, we were talking about how to spot incompetent leaders. And since we are on this topic and you have such a wealth of knowledge and in the industry, I wanted to talk to you about keeping employees or employee retention in the company. How does it benefit a company, and where should they go with that, from toxic culture to a good culture in the company?
Sure. So the first thing I love to tell anyone I meet is, if a company does not allow you to grow, it is time for you to go. Life is too short to be stuck at a position or at a job that you hate. And you actually spend more time at your job than you do with your families. So you really want to be at a place where you're acknowledged. People show appreciation for the work that you do. You're happy. Your coworkers aren't just coworkers, but they become your friends and your family. So keeping employees satisfied and happy will actually help businesses reduce the overhead cost. Because if you think about it, you hire a new employee, you have to spend money to hire them, to train them, to go through the orientation. They might have to learn the new software and whatnot. But if you keep an employee satisfied and they are willing to work for you and just be happy at the job that they're doing, chances are they are going to bend over backwards to make your company profitable. I can share my personal experience from way back when I hated my job, I hated my manager. I just wanted to get in, get out. It was like a paycheck. I hated coming into work every day, but I still got the job done. But I felt so miserable. So whenever I would hit 40 hours, I just wanted to leave that office and I just hated being there and I felt so miserable. However, now when I work with an amazing company, I love going into work and I don't mind working 50, 60 hours for them. I'm not required to, but I just love it so much. And people, your employees will be more happy and more satisfied. They'll be putting in more work for you and the quality of work will be so much better if your employees are satisfied.
So I got two questions for you. The first is, you talked about, you know, people working for something that they want. Mm-hmm. Or a company that appreciates them. In a time of need, when they're actually vetting companies to be hired for them, how do you choose the appropriate company from the employee's perspective? And from the other side, as a company, how do you create that culture?
Sure. So for the first question, how do you select that job? Let's say you have several job offers, and how do you know it's going to be a good culture? How do you know you're going to be happy there? The first thing you can check is Glassdoor. Now, some people love it, other people hate it. If a company has great ratings, they absolutely love Glassdoor. But if companies have really bad ratings on there, of course, they're not going to like Glassdoor. So I recommend employees check Glassdoor, see the ratings on social media, whether it's on Facebook, on Instagram, see all the ratings that you can. And talk to employees that are actually working there right now. And you can also get a feel for the environment when you do go in for an in-person interview or just the way they treat employees. And sorry, Rita, what was your second question?
The second one is, from a business perspective, how do you create that culture?
The company culture? Sure. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, employees are spending most of their day at a company. So what do people want? They want to feel appreciated. They want to hear the words, thank you. It doesn't have to be monetary all the time, even though a lot of businesses think like, oh, if I don't pay my employees enough, they're going to leave me. Well, that is not true. If an employee really likes their boss, their manager, their environment, and the employees are driven by a mission and a vision of the company, and the employee's vision and mission aligns with the company's mission and vision, you're more likely to keep these employees just satisfied. Some incentives you could offer them other than additional benefits is maybe food in the kitchen or outings once in a while. Or if you set a sales target and they reach that, congratulate them. It doesn't have to be something big, but once in a while it can be. So you really want to create a safe, a fun, engaging environment that allows people to grow in their career. People don't want to be stuck in the same position over and over again. That's not life. For life, in order for you to be happy and satisfied in life, you want more. You want more money. You want a higher paying job. You want to advance in your career. Maybe you want to manage people. Maybe you don't. Maybe you want to take leads on a project. But you really need advancement in life. That is one of the needs, the human needs that individuals do need. So, yes, Rita.
There's a story that I actually want to share with you. Do you know the company Zappos?
I do.
They have a very interesting culture, I think. One of the things that I was reading actually about them not too long ago is that when they hire people, they put them through these training. They put everyone they hire through customer service training. And when they hire people, because they have such a peculiar culture, they actually offer them about $2,000 to $3,000 to leave. Like, if you don't feel at any point during this training, if you don't feel like this company is a fit for you, we will pay you $3,000, let's say, to leave and not be hired here.
Yeah, Rita, actually, a lot of smarter companies and more innovative companies, that's what they're doing because they want to keep their network strong and they want to make their alumni happy alumni. So, for example, if an employee is very happy at their job, but you know what? Maybe that job wasn't a good fit and they leave to another organization. If they leave to another organization and somebody says, oh, like, where were you working? Did you like it? You know, a company always wants somebody to say, yeah, I loved my job. I loved the company I worked for, but it wasn't for me, and then have additional referrals. So it's very important to keep happy alumni, even though you do part ways. I can definitely see why Zappos does pay that amount of money just to keep their retired employees satisfied.
Do you think that with when a lot of companies have these incompetent leaders, like the ones we talked about today, those who create toxic environment, when that person leaves, let's say that I'm working for a company and the boss is extremely toxic and they're terrible, and I go to a different company and they're asking about my previous experiences. What do you recommend that I tell them? Coming from an incompetent leader and me wanting this next job, how should that interaction be?
Sure. I recommend always staying positive, say the positive things. Even though you did have bad leadership and incompetent managers, those people can teach you something. For example, for me, I had this terrible, terrible micromanager leader that came into the organization. She made all of us feel sick. We always felt like we had a cold. We were always coughing. My metabolism actually shut down on me. Like, I couldn't digest any food. I would have nightmares. I actually had to pick up a second full-time job just so I can exhaust my body so I can sleep at night. But this leader, this micromanager, she taught me so much of who I don't want to be and how to actually lead an organization. So anytime I'm leading an individual or leading a team, I always look back and reflect, what did my great leaders and mentors have, and what did this micromanager have? And am I acting like the great leaders that I aspire to be, or am I acting like this micromanager that made my life crazy? Let's not swear on the radio.
No, I love your perspective because I think most of us go through toxic leadership at one point or another. And I personally went through a toxic leadership and like just exactly like you said, I got really sick, I started fainting and all these things were going on in my life because of this one person. I took it as an opportunity to pray for that person. So I left, I got another job. I actually left before I got the next job. And I decided, or I figured that that was kind of God's way of telling me that person needs prayers. But I really like your perspective because I, after that, I never knew what to actually tell the people who are interviewing me. And I tried to avoid the topic of working at that institute to begin with. So I really like your perspective. It's really nice to see that maybe instead of looking at the negative things that that person did, look at the positive things that you learned from the organizations and what they taught you and so forth.
You
And what
should
do you,
never, sorry,
go ahead.
Rita, you should never burn a bridge because even though I did have this micromanager leader that I completely hated, you know, I'm very thankful for her, grateful for her. But another thing is, we had another unfortunate situation where, like, 5 years later, I had a coworker, old coworker, pass away, and I was informed, and I went to the funeral and went to the wake, and guess who I saw? My old micromanager boss. And I said, oh, hey, how are you? You know, just as if nothing happened. And she said, wow, you look great. And I told her, yeah, I feel amazing. I didn't tell her that the best decision I've ever made was to leave her, but
Of
it was
course.
good. So you never burn a bridge. You never know when that person is going to come back into your life, when you're going to need them, or when they're going to need you, or you never know where life is going to take you.
Absolutely. Same, honestly, same thing happened to me, except not at a funeral. I actually went back. Someone invited me to to meet the new faculty at the university, and I ran into that my old boss again as well, and same interaction. It was, hi, you know, who are you? You look great. So that is definitely something very beneficial, and it's also something I think people need to be a little bit more forgiving. Yes, you went through all this terrible stuff, but you learned from it and you grew from it. And I think that's, you know, life and suffering go hand in hand. So we always have to learn something from it. What advice do you give to managers so that they don't become incompetent leaders?
Sure. I would tell managers, if you want your employees to trust you, you trust them first. Delegate them with different tasks to do. Don't be over their shoulder watching what did they do, what time did they come in. Allow your employees to have flexibility. I will tell you, the more flexibility you give your employees, the more productive they are. For example, when I had this micromanager boss, she would check the clock. Oh, is it 7, 7:01, or is it 6:50? What time are you coming in? And I just dreaded coming into work. Meanwhile, with a different company where I have this inspiring, incredible leader, they don't care what time you come in as long as the job gets done. You are more happy. You're more productive that way. You have a better work-life balance. And your employees will give you so much more when you give them the flexibility, the work-life balance, allowing them to put their family and friends first, or allowing them to have the different choice. Like, okay, if they need to take a day off, they can make that decision. I also would tell leaders and managers to be nice, to appreciate. I know it sounds very cliche, but be nice, appreciate your employees, say thank you. It doesn't go far, you know, like a small thank you can go a long way. And just really appreciate them. Put a smile on your face. If you are driving the team, you drive the team. And leaders, it's okay to get down on the floor and do the same job as your employees. Help out your employees. Don't think of it as I'm your boss type of relationship. Think about it as a mutual relationship, and you're both equal. Once you figure that out and you have that type of mindset, your employees will appreciate you more. They'll look up to you and they will aspire to be just like you.
It's one of the things that we're reading about or talking about from the article today is humility and integrity, and trying to find these in a good, competent boss. And I think you really did a great job at summing that up. By being on the floor with your team members, you are creating a bond. It's almost like coaching, I feel.
Successful business owners or CEOs will say, if I'm a CEO, I will treat the president of a company and the janitor just the same. And you should see how far this will go. It will take you miles and miles. Who wants to work for a boss that criticizes everybody, that tells people what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and watches every single move that they make? Nobody wants to feel that anxiety from somebody, from that boss. So,
you know what I love? I love bosses that say good morning with your name. You know, good morning, Julie. Like, you know, it feels, you have a sense of, oh, that person knows who I am. I'm valued. I'm more than a number.
Yes, leaders should definitely make a connection with their employees, get to know them on a personal level. It's not just, oh, hey, did you get your job done? Is it done and over with? See how their family is. Do they have a pet? Do they play any sports? What activities do they like to do? How do they spend their weekend? Get involved with their lives.
And if the organization, I think, is to add a little bit of what you're saying, if the organization that you are leading is a big organization, then, you know, delegate a team that would help you do these things so that the employees feel connected to you somehow, whether it's by events that you do together. Maybe you do a game day once every 2 months, events that brings people together and has them bond together. So if you have a big organization, maybe do something like that as well.
Oh, for sure.
Are there any recommendations that you have for someone who is stuck in a toxic work environment?
I would say life is too short and it's time for you to go. My motto is, if a company does not allow you to grow, It's time for you to go. Start job searching. Maybe it's switching a career, or maybe you love your job so much that you would go do it at a different organization. And maybe it's a lateral move. But I would highly recommend you get out of that toxic environment, start applying to other jobs, use your network to either find you a new job or to switch departments within that organization. What if you really like that organization, but you hate your boss? What do you do then? It's time for you to go from one department to another. Even though you might not want to, sometimes you have to do that for your own growth, for your own sanity.
Very well. Any closing remarks that you have for us today?
Be at a job that you love, because life is too short to be stuck at a place you don't want to be. And just continue to dream, whether you want to be an entrepreneur or rather you want to be working for somebody, regardless of what it is, just be happy. And if you're not happy, do something about it. Change, whether it's changing your job, changing the way you think about it, changing your environment, do something about it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Julie. Thank you for being with us. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to reach Julie, Julie has a wonderful LinkedIn page and she's going to tell us all about it. Julie, how can they reach you?
Yes, you can follow me on LinkedIn, add me, connect with me, and you can say, hi, I heard your talk on Reach Us Show, and I'll connect with you, and then we can have a discussion. We'll set up a one-on-one call, and we'll go from there. And my name is Julie, J-U-L-I-E, last name L-A-T-T-O-U-F, F as in Frank. Thank you so much.
Julie Latouf. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. If you want to connect with me, you can do that also on LinkedIn, Rita Sekali, but you could also do that at info@boutiquedigitalmarketing.com. You could also give us a call at 909-333-5116. Once again, that's info@boutiquedigitalmarketing.com. And the phone number is 909-333-5116. Thank you guys for hanging out with us today. See you next week.